Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Love that cute kid's voice. I wish I knew who it was. Chuck and Chernoff as we roll into our 3 o'clock hour on the FAN. Charles, a little under the weather. We wish him a speedy recovery.
I've got AIDS.
Not true at all, I don't believe. He will be back most certainly tomorrow. Dylan Short, the host of the Front Row's Audio Fun Bag, pinch hitting with us today until 6:30 before we turn things over to the Jackets and the Dogs, clean old-fashioned hate, hoop style, tonight on The Fan and The Fan mobile app. The 3 o'clock hour of our show is brought to you by This Stuff Matters. Listen to the new This Stuff Matters podcast posted at 680 The Fan's website, right under the podcast header, or at thisstuffmatters.net. As we await Georgia, Ohio State, which is going to be a wait. We only have 25 more days. I was thinking about the fact that when the playoff begins in 2 years, we'll only have one empty weekend of college football. So
thank the good Lord.
That'll be a nice thing that, you know, you'll get like a week to regroup and try to get things together. All of a sudden, the meaningful playoff games will begin. But in this case, we have to wait 25 days. Georgia remains a 6.5-point favorite in the game. In the meanwhile, Stetson Bennett will be a very busy man. Congrats to Stetson, who is now officially a Heisman Trophy finalist, joining Max Duggan of TCU, C.J. Stroud of Ohio State, and Caleb Williams of USC.
He's 4'6".
Dylan, Stetson joins a very elite group at Georgia. In fact, he's the first Heisman Trophy finalist at Georgia since Garrison Hurst back in 1992, when Garrison was a third-place finisher behind Marshall Faulk and Gino Toretta.
Back when running backs could win the award.
That's very true. So the Stetson story just continues to be more Rudy movie-like every single week when we tell you, well, last year he won the national championship, and this year he has a chance to do it again, and now he's won an SEC championship. Now he's going to New York City as a Heisman finalist. Good for him. I couldn't be happier for him. I almost said the kid. He's not a kid, for the 25-year-old.
I feel like he's been around college football forever, but you can't argue with results. He is one of these guys that, you know, he never really garners a lot of confidence, I'll say, outside of a select group of Georgia fans that are now going to ride or die with Stetson forever. How odd is it that, was he here when Aaron Murray was here? Was he here Aaron's like final year? I feel like it was right after that.
I think he was about 15 at that time.
Pretty close. kind of a similar stature, kind of a similar player, but the story on both of them, how many people would have thought that all the quarterbacks Georgia brings in, Stetson Bennett is going to be the one that walks away with maybe the biggest legacy?
Let me go over some numbers. Seth Emerson had a couple of really, I think, and these are important numbers to get into some Stetson discussion. Stetson had 3,100 yards passing this season in the first three quarters of games, 3,100. Stetson only had 321 passing yards in the fourth quarter all season due to being pulled for blowouts and Georgia just running out the clock. So keep that number in mind. Jake Rowe had this number, that Stetson Bennett had just 35 pass attempts in the fourth quarter all season. That's 2.7 per game. Nine of those came when Georgia was trailing at Missouri. And in that game, Stetson was 7 for 9 for 78 yards, including seven straight completions to finish out a comeback victory on the road. The Heisman has become like every other award. It's thoroughly stats-based, which is fine, but the stats have to come with context and they should come with some nuance. Unfortunately, for most people, they don't watch the game, so they just look at the numbers and they'll see some highlights. And the reason I bring that up, if you were to really like deep dive on this, if you just did ranked opponents for just some idea, like the best competition you play, because college football numbers lie to you more than any other sport because there are so many inferior opponents that you can rack up meaningless numbers. Against ranked opponents this season, Stetson was 5-0. He completed 73% of his passes for 295 yards a game, 13 touchdowns through the air, only two picks, and he rushed for four scores. Again, doing that without playing any competitive action in the fourth quarter because Georgia was well in front in those games. Caleb Williams, you think he's going to win it?
Without question.
Okay. Against ranked opponents, 3-2 with a 64% completion percentage, 325 yards, 12 touchdowns, two picks, four rushing TDs. Their numbers are almost identical, and Stetson did it in about three quarters of play every time they played a ranked opponent. That's supposed to matter.
It is. Now, to your point about Caleb Williams, I got to make sure that we're not doing the exact same thing to Caleb Williams that you're talking about here with Stetson. When you watch Caleb Williams, both of those losses were to Utah, by the way. When you watch those games, especially this last one, the Pac-12 championship game, it became glaringly obvious just how good Caleb Williams was and how important he was to what USC was doing. He hurt his hamstring, and immediately after hurting his hamstring, USC couldn't move the ball, couldn't block. They already couldn't tackle, but it was immediate. When he got hurt and got tweaked, that was it.
I'm not saying anything negative on Caleb. What I'm telling you is if Georgia's defense wasn't good or they were playing competitive games, Stetson's numbers would have been a lot gaudier.
Maybe.
No, there's no maybe. That's a fact.
Stetson is more prone to turnovers than any of the other quarterbacks in this field. And that's not to say anything bad about Stetson. I think there's a line between too many turnovers and not enough turnovers.
I think the turnover thing's a thing of the past. I don't think that as much now. I just gave you numbers against the best competition. He had two interceptions, just like Caleb.
Well, the great news is we'll find out. Against Ohio State. And I'm not saying anything bad about Stetson. I think Stetson's fantastic. I think he's far better than I gave him any sort of credit for. I think that Georgia's offense, and this is to the point as well, Georgia's offense is not really one that's geared towards one player standing out above everybody else. That's what makes Georgia so difficult to defend is It doesn't matter. You can take away Brock Bowers. Like, LSU did a great job taking away Brock Bowers. Doesn't matter. Georgia will just throw to 5, 6, 7, 8 other guys. And Stetson is perfect for that.
But here's the thing, right? You said took away. Brock still had 6 catches, 81 yards. Like, he still had those in those games.
Well, he's still Brock Bowers.
Congratulations to Stetson, too. He won the Bullsworth Trophy, which is given to the nation's most outstanding player who started his career as a walk-on. But even on a night like that, there's always going to be Stetson slander. Just it's built in. People made their opinion known on him in the past. They're not willing to budge. Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News tweeted, okay, so 20 touchdown passes in 13 games now makes you a Heisman finalist. Shouldn't voters at least take this a little seriously? Tell me you haven't watched Georgia football without telling me you haven't watched Georgia football. Because if you watched, you would realize Stetson did all of his work in 2.5 quarters in most games. Nicole Auerbach, who writes for The Athletic and covers college football, tweeted, we need to take Heisman Trophy voting privileges away from anyone who simply voted for the quarterback of the number one team in the country without literally any thought process.
Now, is this because everybody's upset Hendon Hooker didn't get in? Is that what's the impetus behind this?
So Graham Coffey, who covers Georgia, Dogs Out West, retweeted Nicole Auerbach and tweeted, we need to take them away from those who don't understand comparative analysis. Georgia could have gotten Bennett to 350 yards every week. Instead, it perfected the run game, saved red zone plays, team over stats. That's why they're 13-0 instead of coming off a 22-point home loss that was a shot at Ohio State. I think he's 100% right. He could have easily had a lot more throws and a lot more yards if Georgia chose to do it that way. They never did, either due to weather or big leads or their defense was so good they didn't have to. The context in this matters. And if you're Nicole Auerbach and you didn't watch. You didn't watch it all, and that's a shame, or you made your opinion on him before. He's not going to win, no doubt in my mind, but he should get a hell of a lot more consideration. Being there is he's deserved. I think he should get more consideration for the award.
That's tough. I almost think that you should be able to have more than 4 people up there in New York. That's actually a pretty good field. Max Duggan, watch any bit of a TCU game, and you'll see that Max Duggan is pretty much the entirety of TCU. Caleb Williams, when he's healthy, is one of the best quarterbacks we've seen in recent memory. It's a really deep field, and it's a real credit to Stetson that he did not have any bit of the recruiting analysis, the prospectum, anything that these guys had going into their shots, and he had to go and walk on and then go to JUCO to play there, to come back, take the job again, and find his way to New York. It's an amazing story for Stetson Bennett, and he does deserve to be there. And even just aside from the play on the field, there's also at least for me, and this doesn't really matter, but I kind of feel like it should. There's that confidence factor of Stetson. The team plays better when Stetson is in his groove. And I think that's one of the big reasons why Kirby was so dead set on Stetson Bennett, is it's just, he's got that kind of air about him that winners have. And I know you can't measure that and it's a cliche and all that good stuff, but it's true.
So the other thing I'll mention, I read this one last night, that where is Stetson Heisman moment? Where's his, and I'm like, again, you didn't watch. When you're either blowing everybody out or you have big leads on everyone, you don't have the fourth quarter Max Duggan run down the sideline against Kansas State. Now, it turned out to be a loss for TCU, but you don't get those moments because you're up so big in the first half, or your big plays came in the first 2.5 quarters, and then you bled the clock and you ran it out. So we'll see what happens on Saturday night, but congrats to Stetson. The story just continues to get even better. The Saints cagged away a game last night in spectacular fashion. Not that, again, we were going to do the Falcons are only a half game out, so stay with what you're doing. But Tampa was awful last night. Tampa's not good. The Saints are worse, so Tampa found a way to win 17-16. Now, for a lot of you who turned this game off, and I don't blame you because it was ugly. It was a mess. The Saints are leading 16-3 with under 4 minutes left in the game. They had a 97% win probability. Brady's screaming at people on the sidelines. Todd Bowles is punting down 10 points in the fourth quarter at New Orleans' 40-yard line. Just, it was a mess. But Brady and Tampa score with 3:03 left to get within 16-10. And then the Saints had the ultimate awful possession where they had the ball for 20 seconds. Then they punted back to Tampa and Brady. Brady ends up hitting Rashad White on a little dump off for a touchdown with 3 seconds left. And Tampa, who is the best of the worst in the NFC South, gets to 6-6. Now, Dylan, I stand by what I said, though. I think they're going to lose out west at San Francisco this week because, again, Tampa's not good.
Even with Brock Purdy.
Yeah, San Francisco's really good everywhere, and Purdy will just have to babysit it. Then I think Tampa will lose to Cincinnati, who comes into Tampa the week after. Then they have to go back out west to Arizona. So
they can beat Arizona.
They can beat Arizona, but they're not good.
No, but that's kind of the running Tampa's thing with the NFL this year. No one's good except for Philadelphia.
Kansas City's really good.
Unless they're playing Cincinnati.
Buffalo's really good. Cincinnati's scary good. I mean scary because they can pop up and do what they did to Kansas City the other day. But I largely agree with your point that teams are average. Tampa's bad.
Like, yeah, they're not a good team.
It's not a good club. And
they're old. They're slow. They can't run the ball at all.
I could see them being 6-8. I could see two teams being 6-8. Again, probably not the Falcons. But that's where the NFC South is, while the Falcons enjoy their bye week before they get ready to head to the Saints. Well, how funny would it be if I'm right? And the Niners beat Tampa, so they'd be 6-7. Falcons are 5-8 going to New Orleans and Arthur Smith. And I say funny in not a great way. He's like, you know what? We're still only a game out. What if I played Mario to just to tweak people even more, trying to convince themselves they're in some crappy division race?
Yeah, that wouldn't be very funny. What would be funny, though, is if he did continue with the Ritter rollout, and then the Falcons still somehow backdoor their way into an NFC South win. That would be the ultimate funny for me.
I like what you're saying there. Quickly, the Hawks lost again last night at home, 121-114 to OKC. They were outscored in the fourth quarter 37-26. They were outscored in the second half 67-55. I've said my piece on this team. They're an average basketball team. Their metrics are awful. The record's better than the numbers. They're not a good shooting club. They're now 25th in the NBA in fourth quarter scoring differential. They're 27th in fourth quarter scoring. Each of their last four losses have come in games where they blew double-digit leads. And it was a mess last night in the fourth quarter.
Listen, Hawks, do better. I claimed bandwagon fandom heading into this season, and you've completely let me down.
They're just very average. I don't expect much more than that. Do want to offer best wishes to Bob Rathman. Just a scary-looking scene on the Bally pregame last night with him and Dominique. They said he was taken to Emory Midtown Hospital for treatment for dehydration. Bally Sports put out a statement on that last night, and I saw our friend Kelly Kroll tweeted an update today that said, great news, just heard from Bob, who assured me he's feeling much better, physically exhausted, hoping to be released from the hospital shortly. So prayers to Bob on a very speedy recovery. It was a scary scene, so nothing but best wishes to him.
It's time to wing it. Brought to you by Wingin' Burger Factory. With over 50 Atlanta locations, find yours at WNBFactory.com.
All right, we'll take your Wingin' It idea answers today at the Harris Cherokee Casino's Twitter feed. Kirstie Alley passed away last night, 71 years old. She was battling cancer. It was a private thing. Nobody knew about it. I always thought Kirstie Alley was super hot when I was a kid. I was a big fan of Cheers.
She went through a couple different phases, didn't she?
She did, but go back and look at her Cheers, like summer school sort of peak. Even she was on Star Trek. She was a dime. So the question is, she was a dime when I was a kid, Kirstie Alley.
Ryan Reynolds.
Well, he was. He still is, Chuck. Kirstie, rest in peace. Dylan, who was a dime when you were a kid?
And she still is, Tiffany Amber Thiessen. Tiffany Thiessen.
She dropped the Amber.
Yes, there's no Amber
anymore. Have we seen her recently in anything?
Last I remember seeing was from White Collar.
She's on a MTV version of Ridiculousness called Deliciousness or something like that.
Is it looking at food?
Did you look that up or did you know that?
I remember seeing it one night when I was up with a baby on MTV.
How does she look?
She looks good.
Good for her. Brandon Joseph, she was a dime when you were a kid?
Lacey Chabert.
That's a good call.
Party of Five.
Party of Five. She was Mean Girls too, right?
Yeah.
No. Daniel Matthews, welcome back from Vegas. Who was a dime when you were a kid?
Pam Anderson.
Baywatch. What was that dumb show she did after where she was the private investigator or private detective? It was her and two other girls. Quickly, I need a name of that show.
Are you sure that this was a cable show?
So this was a syndicated show. You'd like see it on Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon. It was right after she did Baywatch.
VIP.
Thank you. Horrible show. Brian Hoyt, who was a dime when you were a kid?
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Buffy, there we go.
And then I Know What You Did Last Summer. Right? All right. So you'll send your answers to the Harris Cherokee Casino's Twitter feed. She was a dime when I was a kid. If you want to throw a picture in there, you can do that for fun. Our favorite former Georgia quarterback, Hudson. Oh, wow. It got me all choked up. Hudson Mason will join us in 15 minutes to talk about Stetson Bennett making a Heisman run. But coming up next, this is Kirby Smart's dream come true.
Two chicks at the same time?
I don't want to speak for Kirby.
A really nice hotel room?
Okay. At least it's classy.
You might want one in the ass.
Why? Line? Jump over. I'm going to start the entire tease again. This is Kirby Smart's dream come true. Different than Hoyt's dream, but oddly enough, they both end up in the same place.
Bend over and I'll show you.
I hate you so much. I'll tell you about it next. Bunch of jerks around here. Dan, you did fine. You're allowed to trip up on a word.
Did he?
He did fine.
Yeah, it happens every once in a while. I mean, we're not all like, you know, broadcasting pros like you two back there.
Hey, wow. You got that out without messing up. Good for you, Dan.
Oh, my God. Hey, go in there and punch him. I've told Dan for years, you punch Hoyt once in the face, he'll never mess with you again.
This is why I'm on ESPN Plus and he's not.
You're right. Chuck and Chernoff on the Fan on this Tuesday. Charles is out. He's under the weather.
Well, I'm going to be back tomorrow.
We hope. Dylan Short, host of the Front Row's Audio Fun Bag, hanging out with us till 6:30. Then it's Georgia Tech and Georgia. Clean old-fashioned hate right here on the Fan.
Do we still call it clean old-fashioned hate on the basketball floor?
Yeah, of course we do. We would do it in volleyball and tiddlywinks, pickleball, all of it. The 3 p.m. hour of this show is brought to you by This Stuff Matters. Listen to the new This Stuff Matters podcast. Posted at 680 The Fan's website right under the podcast header or at thisstuffmatters.net. So I was just kind of taking a view, Dylan, a glance at what we're going to look forward to on New Year's Eve when Georgia and Ohio State tangle, when they do football battle. And the first thing I could think of was, this is going to be an effing ratings monster. Like, if you think about what's happened so far this year, Georgia's win over Tennessee drew 13 million viewers on CBS. It was the most watched college football game of the season at that point on any network. Until Ohio State and Michigan bumped them aside and did 17 million viewers a couple of weeks back, making it not only the most watched game this season, but the most watched college football game since 2011. Now you're going to have those two brands playing.
2011? Hold on. What was number one? What was that 2011 one? Does it say?
I don't have that, Dylan. It's just the most watched game since 2011. You got a computer, you can Google it. The point is, Georgia and Ohio State playing a win-or-go-home game with all those stakes and those two brands. Think about what we're getting. Saturday night primetime, New Year's Eve, for which, you know, most people past a certain age, we know it's amateur hour, and people will be tucked away either at a house or at a sports bar or somewhere watching that game. And these are two huge brands that have not played in a generation. They only played once, which I couldn't believe. But they met 1993 in a meaningless bowl game. It was the Citrus Bowl. Georgia won the game 21-14. In that game, Kirk Herbstreit was the starting quarterback for Ohio State. Herbie went 8-for-24 passing for 110 yards and an interception. Eric Zier was starting for Georgia that day, threw for 244. Garrison Hurst had a 163. So that's the last time that these two, again, huge brands had a chance to play, but that was a meaningless exhibition as it was a bowl game. So you go back to this game, Dylan, on New Year's Eve. The viewing experience will be huge. The defending national champs on one side, the brand of Ohio State on the other, two Heisman Trophy quarterback candidates going at each other. One is going to be a top five or top 10 pick. I mean, this is Kirby's dream come true. A 3.5 hour commercial for his recruiting. There's an 8-year-old that is going to watch this game that Kirby's going to start thinking about recruiting in another 4 or 5 years. And this kid's going to fall in love with the G and the Georgia brand and the red and the way they do things. But like for Kirby Smart, yeah, he wants to win the game first and foremost and win another championship. They're going to get 20 million viewers for this thing on New Year's Eve. And you couldn't ask for a more titanic battle. All I could think of when the pairings came out, please let it be Georgia Ohio State instead of Georgia TCU. That would have felt like a letdown. You're not going to get a letdown here.
No, the only way this could go even better for Kirby is if somehow Georgia is a dog. If they end up even a slight dog in this matchup, that is like, I'll be convinced that the committee's just taking whatever Kirby Smart says and running with it. Kirby works best and operates best, kind of like Nick Saban, where, you know, they always like to kind of create this atmosphere of everybody's doubting us or they're trying to take away from us. If you can have Kirby go into a game, a big game like Georgia-Tennessee, one of the big things on that Georgia-Tennessee game was because so many people thought Tennessee was going to run up the score on Georgia. So it was going to be a shootout.
Yeah, make no mistake. You're going to have a lot of people buying the Ohio State part of this. Now, Georgia's going to be the favorite, just like they were against Tennessee. But coaches, you're right, will want to work the angle, and they probably will. Like, looking at Hoyt, some other Georgia people I know, when Ohio State came up, they went, oh, boy. And I want to look at them and go, you think this is supposed to be easy? Like, winning a championship again, you're going to have to beat them or Michigan or somebody. The game itself, I think, has a lot of fascinating traits to it. But the brands and what Georgia wants. Like, think about the Rose Bowl in 2017. That was New Year's Day on 2018. But that was a 3.5 hour commercial, and like Georgia hadn't had in their program history because it was the first time they were in the playoff. Then they had last year's 3.5 hour window with everybody watching them take apart Michigan. I should have looked, and forgive me for not looking at what the numbers were for Georgia, Oklahoma, and Georgia, Michigan. I can't imagine this game's not going to put up bigger numbers because the Ohio State brand carries nationally, and now the Georgia does. The Georgia brand does the same thing. It's going to be bonkers. It's going to be a monster rating.
I believe Ohio State is the most valuable program in college football. I believe that's accurate. Even just aside from that, just the matchup itself between these two teams, these are two teams that don't play very often, but they're both really, really good programs. Ohio State, obviously a blue chip. We can call them Bama of the Big Ten if you want, but they're without a doubt, probably the biggest national brand for college football, I would say. I guess you could maybe argue Notre Dame, but they haven't been good for 40 years, so no one really cares about them. This is just a fun matchup on the field. I think that of this field of four, Ohio State is the only one of these teams that matches up well with Georgia talent for talent.
So Hoyt just told me that Georgia-Oklahoma did 28 million. There's a chance Georgia-Oklahoma beats it, or Georgia-Ohio State beats it. In fact, Dylan, if Georgia and Ohio State don't do 30 million, Hoyt will kiss you on the mouth.
Can I also bring up, other than kissing turtle on the mouth, one more thing? Kirby is, we always talked about build a fence around Georgia and recruit that area. Kirby doesn't do that anymore. He's become Mr. Worldwide, and it all started because of that Rose Bowl.
Mr. 305.
That was him.
And I was just taking everybody great out of the state of California.
He's taking them from all
over.
Right? Look at Keeley from Washington. Right. And by the way, that had everything to do with that Rose Bowl everybody was watching.
I have no doubt. Like these, you can't pay for this. What this is going to be on New Year's Eve. So 30 million or Hoyt kisses Dylan.
Does Dylan have a say?
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. The Fan is the official sports talk station of the Dogs.
Hudson Mason, quick throw, got it to Bennett in the slot. Touchdown.
So let's talk Bulldogs football with former UGA quarterback Hudson Mason.
He is the host of the Locker Room program. You hear it 6 to 10 every morning on The Fan. He's a former Georgia great. He's our pal,
Hudson.
Hudson Mason joins us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line.
Christmas in Dixie. Here comes Santa down that train track.
Happy holidays, Huddy. How are you?
Hey, guys. Doing great.
Stetson Bennett is officially a Heisman Trophy finalist, which just, again, continues to be the craziest story that I can remember covering sports here for two decades plus. But one thing I said, Hud, is I don't think he'll win it, which is a shame because I think you could make a great case if you really looked at his numbers in context because he didn't have fourth quarters. I looked at the numbers earlier. Jake Rowe had the number that Stetson threw the ball 35 times the entire year in the fourth quarter. Imagine if Georgia's defense wasn't very good or Georgia was in closer games, his numbers would look gaudier and maybe he would have a shot. And I think people are going to hold that against him because they're not diving into those numbers.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, that's 2.7 per game in the fourth quarter. That's 2.7 pass attempts per game in the fourth quarter. If you break it down to pass attempts per quarter, it's a crazy statistic given the fact that all the other candidates in Heisman finals, they'll be in New York, played every fourth quarter or were playing much more competitive games and so had the opportunity to pad their stats and throw it a whole lot more. I think interesting exercise, and I was looking at this morning, go compare the overall pass attempts with, you know, Hooker and Max, with Duggan and all the other quarterbacks that are there, the overall pass attempts, and just see how many more times in terms of volume that those guys got to throw it this year. So, look, it's an incredible story, and I said this a couple weeks ago. I think Stetson is on his way to going down as the greatest Georgia quarterback of all time. And with another national championship, I think you can start the conversation of putting him in the same ring as, you know, the David Pollocks and the Herschel Walkers.
Wow.
And, yeah.
What has happened?
That was strong.
What has happened?
I believe that as in terms of the most accomplished players in Georgia football history, most talented. That's not what I'm trying to debate, but most accomplished. I believe he should be a part of that.
Hudson Mason, our Truest Bulldog reporter with Chuck and Chernoff on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line.
And Stetson has always been doubted for whatever number of reasons. When you come in as a walk-on, that's just kind of to be expected. And when you look at him stacked up against the other quarterbacks in this field, physically he doesn't really match up. And I don't know what you think, but what do you have as his best trait? Like, I don't even know if it's anything that he does on the field, like if it's his arm, if it's his eyes, if it's his vision. I don't really know that I'd say any of those are actually his single best trait.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy to start evaluating at the next level because everybody always knocked his size and said his size will be the reason he can't play at the next level. But I would push back on that because the first quarterback you'll probably see taken this year is the same size and Bryce Young. And so smaller quarterbacks are thriving more than they ever have in the game of football, predominantly because the game is played out of the shotgun and not under center. So I don't think it's so much his size as much as it is, okay, can he make the type of throws on a consistent basis? Does he have professional accuracy? Does he have arm strength to make those, you know, different type of throws, those throws where you can't step into it, but can you still get it there? And you know what's interesting about this last game, guys? I thought he made as many big-time throws, next-level throws that he's made in any singular game in his career at Georgia. There were a couple times where he had guys at his feet. He was thrown off balance. He was thrown before guys came out of break. I mean, he was just putting on a clinic of how you're supposed to throw the ball at the next level and what open is and throwing guys open that weren't really considered open. He was a master class at that on Saturday. I think there's a lot of examples that a scout or a GM can go and watch from this past SEC championship game and go, oh, man, if he can make those type of plays and throws routinely, then he's a whole different type of prospect. But he's going to get an invite to the Combine. He's going to get an invite to the Senior Bowl. And those are two great opportunities. And if you get invited to those two things, you're pretty much a some type of a draft pick. Is he going to be a first round, second round? No, but it's hard to imagine that he's not a sixth round or seventh round at bare minimum drafted quarterback at this point. So, like I said this morning, a lot of that will have to do with, much like any quarterback, where you go, the system, what's around you, the support, the stability. There's a lot of factors, but I think he's got more of a skill set and traits than we give him credit for.
Hudson Mason is with us, our Truest Bulldog reporter with Chuck and Chernoff on the Fan. I want to follow up on that because what you said about some of the throws he made Saturday, we had you on after the Tennessee game, and we both said the same thing. He made some NFL-level throws in that game. I said yesterday that if Georgia plays the way they did against LSU and the way they did against Tennessee and the same way they played against South Carolina and Oregon, whatever you want to call their biggest games. I don't think Ohio State's good enough to beat them. But if Stetson plays that way, and Hutt, go look at those four games I just gave you. Stetson was elite in every one of those games. I just don't think Ohio State's good enough to beat them.
Yeah, and that's what people at the next level want to see, is they're going to turn on the tape in the biggest games, and they want to see how does the quarterback perform. And games versus top 25 opponents this year, he has played lights out, and it's been remarkable to see. And so as far as how does that relate or translate to playing Ohio State, I think the biggest question for Ohio State is can they match Georgia's physicality? I know they gave up 30 points this week and gave up a ton of yards passing to LSU and predominantly to a backup quarterback. But and this is a really good skill position group, even without Jackson Smith and Jigba. But they struggle on the line of scrimmage. And that's where most teams get into trouble against Georgia, is when they can't match you, when they can't match Georgia's physicality up front. It makes for a long day. No matter how sexy the bells and whistles are on the outside, Georgia's built from the inside out, as opposed to a lot of other teams are built from the outside in. And I remember one game this year where I turned it on with Ohio State, and I go, man, this is not a good sign. It was the Northwestern game. It was nasty. It was windy. It was rainy. And they could not run a ball. And Northwestern gave them fits up front. And I just look at that, and I go, man, is that telling? And maybe it'll be. I think they're going to have a hard time at the line of scrimmage with Georgia.
I'm glad you brought up that Northwestern game, because I do think it illustrates the biggest differences between Stetson Bennett and C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud, just trait for trait, probably the most talented, pure NFL quarterback in college football, aside from, say, Caleb Williams. But that Ohio State team, whenever the going gets tough, they don't seem to have that confidence factor. And I think that filters from the quarterback. When I was asking more about Stetson's best trait, I kind of lean towards it. It's that confidence. When Stetson's on the field, you get the sense that he really does believe that he's just better than everybody else. And I think the team feeds on that. I think that's why you see when Georgia plays the biggest games, they play their best ball. And I think that's going to serve them well against Ohio State. I think it serves them well against Michigan. I think it serves them well against anybody they play in the country.
Yeah, I mean, you think about the big games that he's played in, the national championship or the college football playoff, let's say playoff, the next game they play in. I mean, this will be his, third playoff game and second SEC champ. I mean, the guy has played in a ton of big games. And guys at other schools that have more talent, like the guy he'll go up against and the, you know, a couple other of the guys have certainly played in a lot of big games. But, man, Stetson Bennett has played in this platform and on this stage a ton of times. And so it's crazy to think that you could get to this point and it kind of just be another game. But that's really where we're at with Georgia. And it's a testament to how great this machine is that Kirby's built, where they're on the stage year after year.
Let's finish by talking about Kirby. When expectations are there and after you win a championship, they're through the roof. I always think that's where we learn about teams and what Kirby and his staff did this season, considering all the losses to the NFL, all the losses in the portal, four assistant coaches. Honey, I can make a claim this might have been Kirby's best coaching job, which I know sounds weird because he just won a championship a year ago.
Yeah, you certainly could have. And I thought that's why he would win SEC Coach of the Year, especially because of the two really bad losses. I said unforgiving losses, hard to look past, with Josh Heupel losing to South Carolina at the time that they did, and Brian Kelly losing to Texas A&M. But and then you throw in the consider and throw all into that Georgia loss, all those draft picks. But you know, look, does Kirby care about that? Does he get caught up in that? He's a human, and I want to say no, because he seems like such a robot in a good way, where he's just about the process. But I'm sure the human element of him wants, we all want to win and be recognized for our achievements. But, you know, I think if he can win back-to-back national titles, it took us 41 years to get one, he might get two and two. That will be a little sweeter than SEC Coach of the Year.
Make sure you guys are checking out Hudson Mason in the morning with the Locker Room, 6 to 10 on the Fan. He is our truest Bulldog reporter. He's
Hudson,
thank you, my friend.
See you guys.
We'll talk
Hudson.
To you next week. All right, coming up next. Hudson. Guess who's back?
Who, me?
Hudson. Back again.
Is it me?
Nope.
Is it Gerard?
Who?
I don't know.
It's Gerard. No, it's actually Lil Drama.
Hey, it's me. It's Lil Drama.
Lil Drama has shown up on the doorstep of one local team, and sounds like he's going to stay a while. We'll talk about him next.
Ooh, Lil Drama.
Happy holidays from ours to yours. It's Chuck and Chernoff on the Fan. We're on FM, mostly. AM-ish. We're always on the app. You can download it and tap. Listen anytime, anywhere. With you until about 6:30 tonight. Then we turn things over to the Jackets and Dogs. Clean old-fashioned hate. Hardwood style on the Fan and the Fan mobile app. As Georgia now is just one win away from playing for a national championship, I would remind our listeners, you need to make your travel plans now if you're a Georgia fan trying to set up a just-in-case out west. But I want to tell you, instead of spending the L.A. dollars, and I was looking at the airfare and the hotels, they are gouging, Atlanta Sports Trips has planned the perfect championship getaway for you. That includes a trip to Vegas.
Vegas!
And then en route to L.A.
Just be sure to enter the code Atlanta.
It's not the code. There's no code involved in this. Here's the deal. Atlanta Sports Trips has got you three nights at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, January 7th through the 10th, with round-trip luxury motor coach transportation from the MGM Grand on game day. On game day morning, that Monday morning, to SoFi Stadium directly in L.A., picture a rolling tailgate. Food, drink, TVs, bathroom, everybody fired up. And game tickets are available for purchase by request. And don't worry, it is fully refundable if Georgia's not playing in the game. You can book now at atlsportstrips.com. A weekend of gambling and football. Again, book now before all the space is gone and it's moving quickly. atlsportstrips.com. Dylan Short is in for the King. And Dill, we had a little drama yesterday. It's not often in this little Atlanta market of ours we get a little tete-a-tete with the media and a player. But let me give you a little background before we let you hear the audio that I'm referring to. So there was a story in The Athletic written by Sam Amick and Sham Sharania that detailed a little back and forth between Trae Young and Nate McMillan Friday at shoot-around that led Trae Young choosing not to attend the team's home win over Denver at State Farm that night. These are sources according to The Athletic. While Trae was receiving treatment on his right shoulder, sources say Nate McMillan asked him whether he would participate in shoot-around, receive treatment during walkthrough, and play in the game against the Nuggets. But Trae Young made it clear he wanted to focus solely on his treatment while missing shoot-around and deciding later in the day whether he wanted to play. But according to The Athletic, that approach did not sit well with Nate McMillan. It was not approved. And since the Hawks' face of the franchise, Trae Young did not participate in shoot-around, Nate McMillan ultimately presented him with a two-pronged option for that night's game. Number one, play off the bench, or number two, don't show up for the game. Which, that's odd to me, too, which is, I guess, sort of lost in the shuffle. Like, you either sit on the bench and come off the bench, or you don't come here at all. So, okay, whatever. McMillan then told reporters that Trae didn't play Friday night due to a miscommunication. For the Hawks, as The Athletic writes, the issue is a microcosm of tension that exists between Young, McMillan, and the locker room. The Hawks have held multiple team meetings early in the season to resolve various conflicts, sources with knowledge of the situation said. For Trae, who had a strained relationship with former Hawk head coach Lloyd Pierce, played a large role in his firing back in 2021, it's the latest sensitive situation that has caused many people within the Hawks to question Young's leadership approach. And I'll add one more part of what they wrote. Executives across the league who have heard about the Hawks' behind-the-scenes issues wonder what it means for the future of McMillan, that he's safe now because they have a winning record and he has 2.5 years left on his contract, but don't be shocked if sooner rather than later they make a change. So all that led up to what happened yesterday at shoot-around. Friend of the show, Zach Klein from WSB-TV, was there, and Trae Young was addressing this for the first time. It's a little longer than stuff we like to play, but it's so good back and forth that I wanted you guys to hear it in its entirety. Take a listen.
What's public was that you're not at the game, so why weren't you there?
Man, it sounded like you was at me, bro.
I'm curious. I mean, you're leader of this team.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for people who don't know the full situation to understand it. So, I mean, it's like I said, it's a private matter again, and it made public, which is unfortunate. And if it was stayed private, it probably wouldn't have been as big of a deal.
But you can see the perception, though, Trae. You are a leader of this team, and when you're not there to support your guys.
When you're an outside guy like you are, you don't understand in a private matter, in a private situation, you should probably stay on the outside. And like I said, it's unfortunate that everybody has to understand and know a little bit of the details that went on inside. But, I mean, inside here, we're all good. And, I mean, if you got any more questions about that, then you can talk to somebody else about it. That's all I got to say about it.
Again, I respect what you're saying about the private of the locker room, the private of the practice corps. We're not here. I guess it's just a public thing. If you're not going to support your teammates when you're healthy, about not going on the bench. So where's the disconnect there?
If I was healthy, I would have been playing.
But, I mean, John was in a boot, and he was still at the game.
Yeah, but you don't know the full story. Again.
You wanna...
Again. No, I don't want to.
So that's just, there's more to it. If you're being healthy, just, I mean,
a private matter needs to stay private.
That was awesome. I love uncomfortable. And a couple of things. A, Zach did a good job. I thought Zach asked fair questions. I think Trey was taken aback because in this city, we don't do this much where if there's an issue, it's usually tap danced around. I thought Zach asked perfectly fair questions.
But you don't know the full story.
I think the audience knows if you listen to me on this show for a long time, I'm a huge Trae Young fan. Trey swung and missed on this all the way around. A, it was a horrible look that he wasn't on the bench. That's part one. Part two, in that interview or that setting with the media, just own it. Just
it's hard for people who don't know the full situation.
And that might be me, but Trey should have just owned it and said, I messed up. I should have been here as the leader of this team. That was a mistake. Just own it. Everybody makes mistakes. He's 23, 24, 25. Just say, I made a mistake. Because issues with star players and coaches have happened since the beginning of time in the NBA, and they will continue. That's not a huge issue. Trey not being on the bench is an awful look, and then Trey not owning it, it's an even awful, what more awful look.
And to that end, when you keep saying, well, you know, you guys just don't have the full story. Well, you know, there's an easy way to rectify that. Why don't you just give me the full story now while we're doing this so everybody has the full story, and if you're right and having the full story will vindicate you.
Private matter needs to stay private.
You're a guy on the outside. You don't understand. Now, I don't know that he's going to give you the full, and I don't think he does have to, but his part of it and what Zach said to him was perfect. John's in a boot. He's on the bench.
That's the part. Like, once that comes out, that's, you know, what are you going to say to that?
So my take on this without having all the details, and I don't, is Trey got into it with Nate. Trey didn't like that Nate was trying to be the guy in charge. And Trey, because he knows his powers, like, what are you going to do if I'm not here? The answer is nothing. But there's a difference in Trey being a leader and Trey being the best player on the team who makes the most money. So I don't know that Trey's a leader. Trey's the best player who makes the most money. Becoming a leader is not just because you make the most money, you're the best player. Those are two separate things. There's a reason why Luka Doncic's teammates don't like him. Ball dominant, very similar to Trey. There's probably a lot of that with Trey, where his teammates don't like watching him handle the ball constantly and not having a lot to do around it. There's also a reason why they've had massive turnover with Dallas, the way that the Hawks might be next to kind of do that. Leadership and best player are two.
They very rarely coincide. Football is a different sport where, because your quarterback is supposed to be the best player on the team, or, you know, in the case of the Rams, maybe it's Aaron Donald instead. Football is a little bit different where, because it is so physical and violent, the best player is generally the one that you're trying to train up to be that leader. But it's no different in baseball. Like, the very rarely is the best, most talented player in the league his team leader. It's just not the case. But when you are that much better than other people too, and this is something whenever, not to sport hop here, but this is something whenever you're talking about baseball and you start wondering, well, why isn't this Hall of Famer on my team? He should just come and coach this for me. It doesn't work like that. When you're just better than everybody else, it can be very frustrating trying to lead people or teach people, when for you it comes very easily. And in basketball especially, when it's a sport that you can be very much an individual and carry a team on your own, there is a ton of ego involved.
Let me be clear. I don't think it's a huge deal. Like I said, coaches and players.
If you win, it's not.
Well, in the NBA, the superstar player has butted heads with the coach since the beginning of time. It becomes bigger when you do what Trey did and you don't show up for the game. That's where this issue is. It's not like Nate has an expiration date on him, like every coach. Lloyd did because of Trey. Nate will because of Trey. They'll go through those coaches. That's whether it happens in 2 weeks or 2 months or a year, Nate will be gone. That's just the way. I don't think he's a great fit with the style that you want to run with Trey, but that's a basketball discussion for another day.
Do you give Nate credit for going after Trey, basically, and saying, show up or don't show up?
It's not about credit. I think Nate was doing his job.
I mean, I'll give him credit for that. I think there are plenty of coaches in the NBA that if their star player does that, well, what are you going to do thing? I think there's a lot of them that'll back down. I mean,
I think you got to walk on eggshells around every superstar because you know his power is tenfold of you. He's the most powerful guy. My question is, will Tony Ressler sit down with Trey and go, it's a bad look, and I want you to own this. I want you to understand it's okay to fall on the sword. We all make mistakes. And if I was advising Trey, whether it's ownership or an agent or somebody, to go, Trey, was a bad look, just say you made a mistake. It's okay. It's not a huge deal. Just say you're 25. You got into it. Heated, no big deal. I should have been here. I own that. That's on me. I'll make it up to everybody. Instead, he got defensive, kept looking at Zach going, it's an inside thing, outside guy. You don't understand. You weren't on the bench. That everybody understood. Everybody saw that. That's a tough thing to overcome. All right, coming up next, Dylan is telling Braves fans to do yourself a favor and use the Dansby saga to prepare yourself for a much bigger loss in the next couple of years for the Braves.
I hope he doesn't die.
Me too. I don't want that. We'll talk about it next.
Spring is here and baseball is back. You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat?
I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.